Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, July 19th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, fire behavior relatively moderate on the Hill Fire. Eureka to host dozens of free recreation activities. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Hill Fire burning south of Willow Creek in the Six Rivers National Forest is now over 4,500 acres and remains 0% contained. Complex Incident Management Team 4 will assume command of the incident tonight in unified command with CAL FIRE's Incident Management Team 2. And earlier today, they shared this briefing.
I'd like to welcome you to the Day Ops briefing for the Hill Fire. My name is Dave Soldovini. I'm the Planning Section Chief with the North Coast Interagency Incident Management Team. The Hill Fire is being managed in unified command with CAL FIRE, as we see their presence around here today. Currently, we're sitting at 4,472 acres. We're showing 0% containment with a total cost of $3 million.
Matt Brown, night operations last night out of the fire. Starting over here in Division Alpha last night, crews continued to mop up and patrol along Route 1, continue to clean up some of these fingers and spots in here with dozer line, and continue to push the dozer line from Alpha over towards Lima to try to connect this piece and lock in that open line. Overall, everything was looking good over there. No major concerns. Fire activity was relatively moderate.
James White, incident meteorologist. So overall, the big thing to remember around here is that terrain is the king. Terrain is going to control your weather. It's going to really change what you see out there. So we have a marine layer this morning coming in from the coast. It's around 2,000 feet in elevation. So if you're down here in the valley, you're down to your lower elevations, your creeks below that 2,000-foot mark. Your humidity recoveries overnight were around 65%. They're starting out pretty moist. But up on those ridge tops, it's already 20% humidity, give or take. And it's going to stay that dry throughout the day. So really keep that heads up for that out there. It's been dry and it's going to stay dry for those upper elevation locations. Otherwise, when it comes to temperatures, we're continuing just a very slight warm-up. Expect your highs in the 80s for the most part. Higher than that, closer into the 90s if you're at your lower elevations where that sun can really get at you. At night, our winds are mostly from the north at the moment. Pretty calm, not too much of a concern. They ramp up through the afternoon, and they turn to the northwest or west. Northwest, west, depending exactly where you are. And that brings a little bit of marine influence, a little bit of sea breeze that can moderate your RH just a little bit. But those winds start to come up through the afternoon, so you should expect your gusts 10 to 15 miles an hour continue to be influenced by terrain. So not too strong, but we've seen that this fire doesn't need much wind to do some stuff. So even 10 or 15 mile per hour gusts, keep your heads up for that. Otherwise, as you head through the night, those winds will calm down. But for those of you, those resources out at night, keep in mind that marine layer going to be about 2,000 feet again tonight. So that RH will stay low all night at those highs ridge tops.
Kevin Osborne, fire behavior trainee and long-term fire analyst with the Type 3 organization. The message that we're sending to everyone today is that this fire kind of lives on we're teetering on the edge. We're close to the marine layer. Sometimes we're in it, sometimes we're not. So small changes can really influence fire behavior that way. The fuels are primed and ready out there. We're still trending really high on our fire danger indices and really low on our dead fuel moistures. So small changes in weather, small changes in wind speed and wind direction, small changes in the placement of the marine layer can really influence our fire behavior. The main expectation for fire behavior today is to be relatively moderate, similar to what we saw yesterday. Lots of flanking and backing fire in Division Alpha and Division Delta, especially with those northwest and west winds that are favorable for those divisions. We expect those fan lengths to be conducive to direct action in both of those divisions. Additionally, in Division Delta, most of that division is within the footprint of the 2022 Ammon Fire. So the fuels in there are scabby, partially discontinuous. And so it's going to take a lot of work in there to get after those spot fires and that mix of burned and unburned. But it also means that the fire behavior in there is not something that's threatening our values at risk at a great level. Really minimal fire behavior in there, so it's going to take effort, but it's not something that's going to be difficult from a control perspective, just lots of time and not a lot of threat to values. Moving around the horn to Divisions Lima and Zulu on the east and south flanks, that's where our greatest concern is. That's where we have more alignment or potential alignment between slope and wind. When we have flanking and backing fire in those divisions or when it's hung up along Mosquito Creek, we expect it to be conducive to direct action. But if it were to cross Mosquito Creek and come into alignment with those slopes leading up towards Route 6, particularly in Division Lima, that's an area of concern for us. So those working along Route 6, be aware you do have fire below you. And if it were to cross Mosquito Creek, the potential for alignment with those northwest and west winds is there. And that could cause us some significant control problems if those winds really hit that fire. Division Zulu, we expect to keep it flanking to the south. Again, flanking fire is likely to be something we can take pretty good action on. If the winds become a little more northerly and in alignment with that Mosquito Creek drainage, there is that potential in Zulu as well. Safety message from fire behavior today is it's early in this fire, but we are in our third day of very similar conditions. But remember, we're at that tipping point based on the fuel's availability. So small changes in weather and small changes in aspect and wind direction could lead to big changes in fire behavior. Thank you.
Jennifer Dyer, I'm the lead resource advisor on this incident, and I'm also going to speak to you as the agency rep for the Six Rivers for this briefing. So first off, want to thank you all for coming out to help us on the Six Rivers. The resource advisor group, we have brought on some local archaeologists. They'll be out in the field today. We're also bringing out some heritage consultants from the Hoopa Valley Tribe. So they will be out there. They're local resources. They're very knowledgeable, so please use them. Ask them any questions. If you need them, hit them on the radio. The resource advisor group will be using yellow and white candy-striped flagging. And so when you see that, please take a look at it. And we're trying to keep machines out of those areas. We're moving a lot of dirt, and we have a lot of sensitive areas out there, archaeological sites, as well as some natural resource areas. So please be heads up on yellow, white, candy stripe flagging. I also wanted to mention that we had a public meeting here yesterday. A lot of folks from the community came out. They're extremely appreciative of all the good work that has been going on. And there have been a lot of years of fire here. A couple years ago, the Lightning Complex was burning in people's backyards, and so they're very aware of what we're doing out there and very appreciative. And finally, I just wanted to reinforce what the safety was mentioning about driving. So we do have a lot of resources out here. We have a lot of community that is very appreciative of our time and work. And there are a lot of dangers, and one of the big hazards is the driving. Our roads are unforgiving, so if you slow down, you'll have better opportunities for reaction time. And so just want to reinforce that driving is one of the most dangerous things we do. Once again, thank you on behalf of Six Rivers National Forest.
Evacuation orders and warnings remain in place for residents south of Willow Creek near Friday Ridge Road in the Mosquito Creek drainage. Fire behavior is expected to be relatively moderate. The north side of the fire is burning within the footprint of the Amon Fire, where the fuels are sparse, which results in minimal fire behavior in that area. However, there is potential for growth to the south of the fire due to north-northwesterly winds. For more information, you can go online to InciWeb at InciWeb, InciWeb.wildfire.gov. In addition, the Forest Service has created a Facebook page dedicated to the incident. You can search 2024 Hill Fire on Facebook. KEMA News is sharing their content on the KEMA News social media sites. Eureka will have dozens of free recreation activities next Saturday, the 27th, and it adopted changes to its ranked choice voting ordinance. Kelly Lincoln brings us the details.
On Tuesday, July 16th, the Eureka City Council held its second hearing on adopting amendments to its ranked choice voting and heard from its Department of Recreation about the citywide Come Out and Play Day coming up on Saturday, July 27th. On July 27th, Eureka will hold its 10th annual Come Out and Play Day, which features a large variety of recreational activities for people of all ages. Recreation Supervisor Jim Thomas and Community Services Coordinator Catherine Cunningham gave a presentation to the council on the events that are planned.
So we'll start with at Sequoia Park here. We have yoga in the park starting at 11 to noon. We have Zumba in the park from noon to 1. We have Humboldt Bay Fire with a slip and slide from 1 to 4. We have Nanny Nature AOK, Wizards of Play from 1 to 4, doing juggling, fun games, and different parachute activities. And forgot to mention at the beginning, all of these activities are free. We'll be fishing at the Sequoia Park Duck Pond with for freshly stocked rainbow trout. We'll have different loaner reels available for people if they don't have their own reels, so come on down and do that. We have the Family Olympics from 2 to 4 with prizes. We'll have different informational tables and games and activities from noon to 4 with Black Humboldt, Queer Humboldt, Central Del Pueblo, Hambro, Humboldt Waste Management, T180 Health and Wellness, and food and drinks from Humboldt Bay Burgers and Mermaid Treasures Shaved Ice. And then for a nightcap at the park, we will have a movie at 8:30, and we put a vote out to the public, and Sandlot was the winner, so we'll get to watch that.
Okay, over at the Sequoia Park Zoo, kids 12 and under are going to be able to get in free with a paying adult from noon to 4. We will have our skateboard competition over at Cooper Gulch Park from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and admission to the Clark Museum will be free from noon to 5, as well as the Discovery Museum from 10 to 4 p.m. Admission will also be free. And over at Clara May Berry Park, over near the library, we will have activities from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And then you can head down to the waterfront to join Pacific Outfitters for kayak demos and different hiking and backpacking demos. That'll start at 10 a.m. and go till 4 at the Bonnie Gould Dock. And Humboldt Kiters will be at Halverson Park from 11 to 4 p.m. The first 100 in attendance will get a free kite to decorate and give a test fly. And then continuing the partnership with the Mattaquette this year again, there will be free rides for all ages, 10 a.m., 11:30, noon, and 12:30, and it will be first come, first serve.
We'll have radio-controlled cars over at Hammond Park from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and home plate batting cages at Redwood Acres will be free from noon to 5 p.m. And kids will golf free at the Eureka Municipal Golf Course with a paying adult from noon to 4. We'll have a long drive contest and a putting contest.
And this event can't happen without outstanding community partners that are willing to donate their time and resources. So on behalf of the Recreation Division and just the whole city of Eureka, we really wanted to thank all these organizations and groups.
The council held a second reading of changes to its ordinance on ranked choice voting in city elections. The ordinance was adopted in 2022, but the first election in which it will be used is coming up in November. The council had received an email from Californians for Electoral Reform that advocates for the adoption of ranked choice voting across the state of California. Their email suggested the city's amendments to this ordinance are still too vague. Via Zoom, Steve Chesser of Californians for Electoral Reform said,
"The most important change has to do with the suggestions to the tabulation section, especially the part about exhausted ballots. Getting the tabulation language correct is extremely important so that the registrar knows what settings to use with the voting equipment. Any ambiguity that isn't noticed until a few weeks before election night would be very embarrassing. Stephen and I want Eureka's first ranked choice voting election to be successful, just as I know you and your staff do. Your staff is well-meaning and doing the best that they can, but they are not experts in this area. I did send them a model ordinance 2 weeks ago based on what San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, and San Leandro have in their implementing language. And it would be a whole lot simpler if you just adopted that language. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much."
However, Eureka City Attorney Luna said it is too late to consider these changes. City Council Member Mario Fernandez asked,
"Council Member Fernandez. referring to the email that in item 3, they list recommending eliminating items 5 and 6 under their general provisions that they listed. It's 37.21. Would that be a major revision that you would see as not wanting to handle tonight then, but maybe at a future date perhaps?
Attorney Luna responded.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment. Okay. The removal of items 5 and 6 would potentially fundamentally change the ordinance as introduced, and I am not advising it tonight.
Okay.
The council adopted the ordinance without further discussion.
I'll make the motion to waive full reading, read by title only, and adopt bill number 1036-CS, an ordinance of the City of Eureka amending sections 37.20, 37.21, and 37.23 of chapter 37 of the Eureka Municipal Code, ranked choice voting for the offices of mayor and city council.
I'll second. We have a motion and a second. Please vote.
Councilmember Fernandez voted no. 4 yes votes. Motion carries.
During public comment, the council heard complaints about their projects that will take parking away from the small independent businesses in Old Town. One of the speakers reminded voters that the matter is on the ballot for Eureka residents in November.
I also want to encourage everyone watching and listening to take notice on this issue as it will impact the future of Eureka. Without these jobs and businesses, our local economy will be devastated. That's why I am also supporting Measure F on the November ballot. It brings a sensible solution to these issues.
This is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News.
One local Little League All-Star team will begin playing for a state championship this weekend as an impressive summer for the young Humboldt County teams continues. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in a moment, and we'll also be looking at all of the other big local sports stories from this week, including all the latest news on the Humboldt Crabs as they look to secure a place in the inaugural Pacific Empire League Championship Series, as well as updates on the local American Legion baseball teams, news of where 3 South Fork student athletes will continue their playing careers, and how the ongoing wildfires are affecting the local sports schedule. But first up, a successful summer for the local Little League teams continued this week, and for one team in particular. The McKinleyville 12-year-old All-Stars will begin playing for a NorCal State Championship this weekend after securing a Section 2 championship on Monday night. The young McKinleyville players improved their record to 6-0 with 3 wins in 3 games at the section tournament, which was held in Susanville. The District 26 champs defeated Foothill 1-0 in the section championship game, with Teo Arredondo scoring the only run of the game on a tieway double in the fourth inning. The MAC All-Stars are now among the last 7 12-year-old teams still playing in Northern California, and if they can win a NorCal title, they would advance to the West Regional Tournament, where they would face off against the state champs from all around the West Coast, with the winner of that tournament advancing to next month's Little League World Series. The tournament gets underway on Saturday morning, and the McKinleyville players will be first to play when they face off against Land Park Little League out of Sacramento at 10:30 a.m. right after the opening ceremony. The young McKinleyville players beat Land Park when the two teams played each other in the state tournament as 10-year-olds 2 years ago. The McKinleyville 12s are the last remaining local Little League team still playing after 3 other local All-Star teams saw their seasons end this week. The Redwood Empire 11-year-old All-Stars barely fell short in their bid for a NorCal State tournament berth when they lost their section championship game in extra innings on Wednesday. Redwood Empire fell 3-2 to Chico Central in 8 innings in Yuba City. The McKinleyville 10-year-old All-Stars also saw their season end when they fell 13-11 to Chico Central in the championship round of their section tournament in Cottonwood on Tuesday night. On Monday night, the McKinleyville Junior All-Stars saw an impressive summer end in a loss to College Glen at the NorCal State Tournament in Rocklin. The Mac Juniors won both the district and section championships this summer. Switching gears, the Humboldt Crabs remain in the chase for a place in the inaugural Pacific Empire League Championship Series, with a little over 2 weeks remaining in their season. The Crabs, who will play a crucial three-game league series against the Medford Rogues at the Arcata Ballpark this weekend, are in the midst of a tight battle for second place in the league standings. After opening league play with six straight road losses, the Crabs would go on to win 9 of their next 12 league games to put themselves right back in the mix. With 5 league games remaining, they are battling the Lincoln Potters and Medford Rogues for second place in the final league standings, with the high-flying Healdsburg Prune Packers riding high in the standings and well ahead of the chasing pack right now. The crucial weekend series against the Rogues gets underway on Friday night, with first pitch set for 7 p.m. The two clubs will also play on Saturday night at 6:30 and on Sunday afternoon at 12:30. Last weekend, the Crabs swept 3 league games against the West Coast Kings. The longtime local club introduced their 2024 Hall of Fame class to the crowd at the Arcata Ballpark before Saturday's game. This year's Hall of Fame class includes Al Brizak, Matt Tomlin, Greg Lorenzetti, Brandon Marcelli, Reggie Christensen, longtime groundskeeper Fred Lamelli, and the 2015 Crabs team. In local American Legion baseball action, meanwhile, the Northern Humboldt Giants won last weekend's 17U Humboldt Eagles tournament, which was held at the Redwood Fields in Cutton. The Giants won all 4 of their pool games and followed that with an 8-1 win over Legacy Baseball out of Reading in Sunday's championship game. Arcata High School's Ben Lukens continued his impressive summer with a complete game victory on the mound in the championship, giving up just 1 run on 3 hits and striking out 10. The impressive Lukens also had 3 home runs in tournament play. In 19U American Legion baseball action, the Humboldt Eagles are playing at the 2024 California Area 1 tournament in Fairfield this weekend, with a place in next week's state tournament on the line. The Eagles, who appear to be playing their best baseball of the summer at the right time, won 3 of their 5 games at their own 19U tournament last weekend and finished 3rd overall. On Tuesday night, they warmed up for the area tournament with a hard-fought 6-5 win over the Giants in 9 innings. In other local sports news this week, 3 South Fork student-athletes recently announced where they would be continuing their sports careers. All 3 are taking their talents to College of the Redwoods. Tommy Rotbergs and Chevy Barrow Van Meter will each play men's basketball for head coach Ryan Bizio, while Chloe McConnell becomes one of the first recruits for a new CR softball head coach, Michaela Harris. McConnell was a 3-sport star for the Cubs. In addition to all-league selections in soccer and softball this year, McConnell also received an all-league honorable mention in basketball. Rotbergs and Barrow Van Meter, meanwhile, both played huge roles on the basketball court for the Cubs during their time at South Fork High and helped lead them to back-to-back Little Four Conference championships in 2022 and 2023, as well as helping them reach a North Coast Section Championship game this past winter. And finally this week, the ongoing local wildfires have forced the cancellation of 2 upcoming motorsports events. With CAL FIRE using the Redwood Acres to help battle the fires, raceway officials have been forced to cancel the upcoming race night scheduled for July 27th. This weekend's Redwood Outlaw Karts Race Day has also been cancelled. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Turning to Mendocino, KMUD's Matt LaFever has the headlines out of Mendocino County, where telephone scammers are claiming to be local cops, in-home healthcare workers are celebrating victory, and a federal lawsuit against a fired Ukiah police chief is moving forward.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Friday, July 19th, 2024. The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office is warning residents about a series of fraudulent phone calls targeting local citizens. According to reports, scammers are posing as Sheriff's Office employees and demanding payment over the phone for fictitious fines. In a message posted on social media, the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office said, quote, "The most recent examples involved individuals claiming to be representatives of the Sheriff's Office. They inform the recipients that they have missed jury duty and must pay a fine immediately," unquote. Authorities emphasize that no legitimate law enforcement officer from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office will ever call you to request money or payments. The Post went on to say, quote, no deputy, sergeant, lieutenant, or captain from our office will ask for payment via electronic transfer, gift cards, payment apps, or Bitcoin, unquote. Residents are strongly advised not to disclose personal info over the phone and to refuse any request for payment through unconventional methods. If you receive a suspicious call or letter, contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office directly at 707-463-4086 to report the incident. In a landmark development this week, nearly 2,000 in-home supportive service providers in Mendocino County have ratified a new 3-year contract with the county's Board of Supervisors. Represented by SEIU Local 2015, the nation's largest long-term care union, these workers have secured significant improvements in their working conditions. Kimmy Vaughn, the executive vice president of SEIU Local 2015, said, quote, the contract includes several key provisions aimed at enhancing the lives of IHSS providers, unquote. Under the new agreement, wages will rise to $18.81 by October 2024, with a path to $20.31 by January 2027. The contract also allocates $30,000 for training and personal protective equipment, while strengthening non-discrimination protections and addressing caregiver shortages in remote areas. In-home supportive service provider Priscilla Tarver said, quote, we fought hard for these improvements. It's a step in the right direction, particularly the investments in caregiver training, unquote. With the demand for in-home care on the rise, this contract is crucial in attracting and retaining skilled caregivers across California. Kimmy Vaughn praised the outcome as a testament to collective action, saying, quote, for over a year, Mendocino County providers have shared their stories and raised their voices. This victory shows the strength of solidarity, unquote. Mendocino County 2nd District Supervisor Momo Heron recognized the negotiating team for their dedication to community care, saying, quote, this contract acknowledges the vital role of our IHSS providers. It sets a standard for others to follow. Mendocino County's 1st District Supervisor Glenn McGordy expressed gratitude to SEIU 2015 members for their essential contributions. He said, quote, SEIU 2015 members are heroes. Mendocino County stands with them in their pursuit of fair compensation. In Ukiah, a federal civil lawsuit alleging sexual assault by former police chief Noble Weidlich has taken a significant turn. Judge Araceli Martinez Olguin has allowed the case to proceed, ruling that the top police officials and city administrators were aware of past abuse allegations against Weidlich, but promoted him to lead the department nonetheless. Eric Rose, spokesperson for Johnson & Hutchinson, the law firm represented the plaintiff, known publicly as Jane Doe, said, quote, this decision marks a major development in the case, unquote. The federal judge dismissed claims that the victim's civil rights were violated, but acknowledged that foreseeability of the risk posed by Weidlich. The lawsuit contends that despite prior allegations and a domestic abuse lawsuit against Weidlich, city administrators proceeded with his promotion without adequate supervision. The federal case was filed in March of 2023 and capped a tumultuous year for local law enforcement. Mendocino County District Attorney David Eister and others have remained silent on the Weidlich matter and other sex-related cases involving local officers. Eister has not provided specifics on why the Weidlich case was never charged, despite a probe by Sonoma County Sheriff investigators. The public only heard of the sexual allegations through a state attorney general review, which described it as a criminal complaint. Eister did not respond to a request for comment on the federal court ruling. Jane Doe is a longtime Ukiah resident known for supporting law enforcement and the military. The lawsuit claims Weidlich, while on duty in June 2022, showed up at her home in uniform and demanded sex. The conduct is described as cruel, unusual, and sexually abusive. Jane Doe alleges that she is undergoing counseling due to the mental and physical pain from the encounter, as well as the subsequent grief and humiliation. The lawsuit seeks unspecified general damages, medical expenses, punitive damages, and attorney fees. Initially, a claim for damages was filed against the city and the police department, but was rejected in late 2022. The federal lawsuit followed on February 28, 2023. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt LaFever in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Kelly Lincoln, Matt LaFever, and Ray Hamill. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.